Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. This is going to be an empowering hour. We're going to begin, of course, with the latest on health and healing. Lycopene, it's in watermelon, it's in tomatoes, it does a whole lot of good in saving your life. I'll explain how. Also, severe caloric restriction has an impact. I'll tell you what that is. An increase in fiber also keeps you from dying. From what disease? And young coconuts provide one of the highest sources of electrolytes known. The World Health Organization, rising energy drink consumption may pose a threat to public health. What's that about? Shiitake mushrooms, a must for the immune system, and a lot more on health and healing. Then I'm going to do a bit of news involving the whole idea of an Ebola vaccine. Now, I predicted this. I said this was really a part of what's behind this hysteria, and we have taken this way out of proportion. And everything from the stock market falling, not that that's a bad thing because it was a bubble, but people becoming ridiculous. I gave a protocol on yesterday's program of how to keep your immune system strong against all viruses. It's one that I have advocated and recommended to the tens of thousands of people I've counseled over the decades. But the main part of today's show is going to be devoted to something that you have not heard as a program on the air. And it's a very serious issue. It's in the science. It's just not in the media. Surviving a solar storm. Now, I've been watching coronal mass ejections that you can see over the internet from science channels. And we had two enormous ones that had they been in the Earth trajectory, we would have been toast. One was 2 weeks out and the other was about a week and a half out. Now, that's in the recent past, a few weeks ago. There's even one yesterday, but not a bit of this makes the mainstream media. So today, we're going to have three distinguished people who are all experts in the field. Professor Robert Schoch, on professor of geology, Boston University, and the author of Forgotten Civilization, The Role of the Solar Outburst in Our Past and Future, because I want him to tell us about what happened in the past. And he has some remarkable material for us. And then Matthew Stein, MIT graduate in engineering, who's written the definitive book, When Disaster Strikes. And we'll also be talking with Lawrence Joseph, an expert professor, and talk about solar cataclysm, how the sun shaped the past, and what we need to do to save our future. So you're going to get, for a little longer than normal, for our guest, what to do, what we need to do in order to understand what's happening right now. And here is the question. What's the big deal? What's the odds? I mean, what are the odds of a solar storm? Every decade, it's 1 in 8. Would you get on an airplane if the pilot says, well, we have a 1 in 8 chance of crashing? Over the next decade, you bet I wouldn't be riding on that plane. So we're going to tell you that we are going to get hit by solar storms. That is not in scientific debate at all. But when and how bad will it be and what will happen to us and can we prepare for it? Let's begin. We have a lot to share. Lycopene is a very important nutrient. And the latest research is a double-blind, placebo-controlled study. And it looked at cardiovascular disease patients treated with statin drugs and an equal number of healthy controls given 7 milligrams of oral lycopene or a placebo daily for 2 months. And then they assessed forearm blood flow and endothelial dependent and independent vasodilation and basal nitric oxide activity. All these things measure cardiovascular health. What they found was that if you had the lycopene and 7 milligrams is not much. I recommend 20. You had a 53% improved endothelial vasodilation. Wow. That means that your blood is able to flow through your arteries and you're healthier, less likely to have a heart attack. Also, a good study showed that cognitive function, which starts to decline after about the age of 40, improved with vitamin B supplementation, especially with those who had an elevated homocysteine level, which most Americans do. This is published in Nutritional Neuroscience, and it was a clinical study on middle-aged and older men and women who were reducing their cognition, had a reduced cognition. And what they did is they gave them folic acid, 800 micrograms. That's okay. I would suggest 1 milligram, which is 1,000 micrograms, but I would give it in methylated form, much more bioactive. 10 milligrams vitamin B6, I would give 50. And 25 micrograms B12, that's nothing. I would give 1 milligram. Or a placebo, that's what they got, for 14 weeks. And then cognitive aptitude test and serum analysis of total homocysteine was done. And not surprisingly, the B vitamin levels improved among those who were supplementing with them. Homocysteine was not really changed, but cognition was improved. So, the takeaway message. If you are over the age of 40 and you want to improve your cognition and memory, then a B complex each day would do you a lot of good. A good study from the Journal of Neuroimmunopharmacology shows that cinnamon can impact Parkinson's. That's right. There's an article indicates that cinnamon, the kind that you and I eat in our different dishes, could be used by Parkinson's patients to prevent the disease from progressing. A group of scientists at Rush University Medical Center studied the effects in a laboratory model, and they found that when cinnamon is metabolized into sodium benzoate in the blood and brain, the loss of beneficial proteins as Parkin and DJ1 was halted, while neurons that produce dopamine, a neurotransmitter, by the way, that is reduced in Parkinson's, was protected. And motor function, which can be significantly impaired by the disease, the tremors, the shaking, the loss of balance, that was improved when they used cinnamon. So that's good. Now, I'm not claiming, no responsible person would, that one single nutrient is going to turn around a disease. That's not going to happen. But when you realize that they're testing a small amount, and they're testing it in powder form, I would use cinnamon oil at a very high concentration and do recommend that for people I'm counseling who want to improve their health with brain disorders. So cinnamon oil, that is very important. I would suggest that for people with Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, and Alzheimer's and dementia. If you want to increase your life and slow down heart attacks and strokes, an article in the British Medical Journal shows that you can do that and lower your risk of dying if you take more fiber. This was a health professional follow-up study of 2,200 women from the Nurses' Health Study, and they found that their incidence of myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack, was substantially reduced when they increased the amount of fiber. Now, the average person doesn't get enough fiber because the average diet doesn't have good quality fibers. The fibers you do get in the diet are already heavily processed, whereas when you have a juice, and if you blend the ingredients like in a blender, you're going to have real good fiber. And if you juice and you hold the fiber aside, A, you can use it to let it biodegrade down, put it in your soil, enrich your soil, or you can mix that into a soup, and then it's more easily digested, and that's good fiber. Oats beta-glucan, that's a good fiber. Sesame seeds, great fiber. Flax seeds, great fiber. Sunflower, pumpkin seeds. The skins of berries, all good fiber. So see, a good, healthy vegan diet provides you with the fiber you need. And this study is simply saying you can live longer, reduce your risk of premature death and heart attacks. If you do not have enough minerals, especially the minerals that are important for your bones, according to the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, lower bone mineral density can lead to a higher risk of developing heart failure. In fact, when they looked at 13,000 individuals and they did this study on them, it was the study which measures bone mineral density in the heel as broadband ultrasound attenuation, they found that there was a significant change when people had the minerals that are important for the bone and when they didn't. So if you're not getting your minerals, calcium, magnesium, manganese, phosphorus, you are at greater risk of a heart attack. The omega-3 fatty acids in this study, according to the Annals of Rheumatic Disease, done at Duke University, made for healthier joints. So you want to get the omega-3 fatty acids in. They help your joints. And that's important. Vitamin D boosts survival rates of colon cancer patients. This is in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. And this was done at the Medical Research Council of Human Genetics Unit, University of Edinburgh. They worked with 1,600 patients who had surgery for colorectal cancer. And what they found is vitamin D substantially improved survival rates. Now, those same vitamin D taken with omega-3s may reduce the risk of Lou Gehrig's disease. This is according to an article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Neurology. It reports that those who consumed the high level of omega-3 fatty acids had a dramatically reduced risk of developing ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease in a meta-analysis of five large studies. So I'm suggesting you make sure you get your omega-3s every day. Now, where do you get your electrolytes if you're exercising and sweating? You want to make sure you keep them in your body? Coconuts. I remember the first time that we put coconut water out for the runners and walkers in our Natural Living Running and Walking Club to do the New York City Marathon. And we have our own table and our own volunteers. About 300 or 400 volunteers give our runners and walkers the water as we run by. And everyone else is getting all kinds of stuff to drink and electrolyte drinks, but those are all sugar and artificial chemicals. So we just use raw organic coconut water. Well, this study here shows that it does the trick. It's loaded with nutrients. Researchers found that there are cytokines in coconut water, showed to significantly be anti-aging, anti-carcinogenic, anti-thrombotic. That means then everyone going on an airplane should have with them a quart of coconut water. Take some at the beginning of the flight, and then every half hour take another 6 ounces. That can help prevent thrombosis. But it also gives you potassium, lots of it, and little sodium, very little, tiny amount. So it's just perfect. So make sure that you're working out, you're drinking coconut water. Not good if you are not paying attention to mushrooms, because mushrooms are one of nature's most perfect foods. And a really good study shows that, from Prevent Disease, shows that the shiitake mushroom is great for your immune system. And it's been a symbol for health throughout the Orient for a long time. In fact, last night when I had a simple bowl of brown rice and then lotus root that had been steamed and sautéed, shiitake mushrooms steamed and then sautéed in ginger, fresh ginger and garlic, and then different seasonings, curry, seasoning and fennel, anise, and cardamom. Gives a nice Indian flavor to it. Very immune building. But this goes back to the Ming Dynasty, when the great Chinese physician Wu Zhu wrote that the mushroom could be used as a remedy for everything from indigestion to poor circulation to liver problems to aging, and it helped the qi, the life force. It was the ultimate tonic. Today, there are thousands of studies on the benefits of the mushroom. And most importantly, I find that it's in helping the immune system. There's a really good article in the Journal of Microbiology and Biotechnology about the polysaccharide extract of shiitake was shown to stimulate the function activation of macrophages. Now, macrophages are white blood cells involved in the body's initial response to infection, destroying pathogens and sending out little chemical signals to the immune system to mount an attack on an invading organism. So it makes a lot of sense, if you have any immune debilitating condition, to have shiitakes. For those with AIDS-defining illnesses and cancer, I make sure that they're getting at least four different types of mushrooms daily in large amounts into their system. There was a biological pharmacological bulletin published, an article showing that shiitake mushroom protected liver cells, and that's good. And there's cardiovascular benefit to shiitake mushrooms. It helps your heart, and it helps by preventing too much immune cell binding to the lining of our blood vessels. And in order for immune cells and other materials to bind onto our blood vessel lining, certain protein molecules called adhesion molecules must be produced and sent into action. And by helping to block the adhesion molecule production process, substances in shiitake mushrooms can help protect our blood vessels. So, healthier heart, anti-cancer, and you want those polysaccharides from those shiitake mushrooms. Get them in your diet. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Now, we're going to take a brief break and come back, and we're going to go directly in to our guest, because I want to give more time today to share these insights. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Please tell the phone, don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad for something I might have said, please don't forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love, baby.
This will be one of many programs I'm going to be doing on different aspects of solar storm activity. Lawrence Joseph, seasoned investigative journalist who has been writing on science, nature, politics, and business for over a quarter century for the New York Times, Discovery, and Huffington. And during the last several years, he has been conducting in-depth research on solar storms.
Nobody marks the date July 23rd, 2012 as anything significant, or at least very few people do. But that was a day when we could have gone down. And by gone down, I mean the power grids around the world have been disabled for months or years. And that's not according to my opinion. That's according to the not only NASA, but the National Academy of Sciences, which is no fringe group. It was founded by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, and is generally considered to be the most esteemed scientific body in the world. So let me tell you what we just missed. Periodically, the sun issues explosions, solar flares that toss blobs of plasma harmlessly out into space. Every now and then, one of those blobs, and I like to think of it as just a piece of the sun being spat at us and hitting us. It hits us. And that's what the Earth's magnetic field is for, to protect us against those incursions. But on July 23rd, 2012, we just missed being hit by a blob that would have taken us down and put us back into the 18th century. At least that's the way NASA reports it, but I beg to differ with them. Because 18th century pre-electric society, people knew how to live without electricity. We don't. If we were all of a sudden found ourselves deprived of electricity, we'd not only be without telecom, but we would be without refrigeration, most law enforcement, military security, pumps for gas and water would be knocked out. We would be in an 18th century situation without the 18th century knowledge of how to live like that. If we had heard about an asteroid that was big enough to knock modern civilization back two centuries, it would be the talk of the world. But this blob, because it's more amorphous and less understood, went by relatively unnoticed. In fact, it took scientists about a year to recalculate that the data that it had existed at all. So we've got a situation that's extremely dangerous. And it harkens back to 1859, which is the last time a major solar blob or coronal mass ejection, is the proper term is, hit us. And that was known as the Carrington event. And that's all often pointed to as the turning point in our understanding of solar physics. The idea that the sun could harm us, not just in terms of sunburn or skin cancer, things like that, but actually deal us a death blow. Why didn't the 1859 Carrington event, if it was as big as the one we just missed 2 years ago, why didn't it knock us out? Well, we didn't have a power grid. Society was largely unelectrified. Same thing when in 1921 we were hit by a very large solar storm. The electricity was being used, but there was no grid per se. Each city had its own generator and perhaps was connected to the neighboring city through a backup system, but it wasn't megawatts flying around the grid as there are today. So there was nothing to knock out. That's the bad news. The good news is there's really a relatively simple, not easy, but simple way to protect ourselves. Much as you protect your computer equipment and your plasma TV with a surge suppressor, we can do the same with our power grid by protecting the most important transformers that would be knocked out in case of a solar storm. All we have to do is install surge suppressors around the grid. It would cost, estimates run from $500 million to $2 billion, which is a lot of money, but not that much considering what we would be saving ourselves. You protect the grid. And let me reiterate, what we're protecting is not just the electricity supply, but the society that depends so totally on electricity. Anybody who's gone through a blackout for a couple of days can begin to imagine the terrible inconvenience, but the danger of being knocked out for months or years, as the National Academy of Sciences said, is positively incomprehensible to most of us. May I tell you why it would take that long to,
sure,
to get
this? Yes.
There's the vulnerable points in the power grid are the largest transformers. Transformers step down or step up the flow of electricity to connect it properly from generating stations to communities and then to homes. The big transformers operate within very small tolerances, and a little injection of electricity from the sun, which is essentially what the plasma blob would do as it crashes through our magnetic defense, fries the transformers. It doesn't just incapacitate them temporarily, but it fuses their copper winding, so they have to be replaced. Right now, for the largest and most important transformers, there's a 3-year waiting list on the world market. None of them, by the way, none of these of the largest transformers are made in the United States anymore. Made in India, Brazil, far-flung places. To knock out these transformers, if they were knocked out, we would have a terrible situation because we'd have to wait 3 years, and we'd be at the mercy of foreign powers, not necessarily malevolent foreign powers, but foreign powers nonetheless. And you say, well, why don't we just stock up on them? We just fill a few warehouses with them in case. I wish it were that easy, but transformers are calibrated to their specific point in the power grid, so you can't just sort of one size fit all.
Lawrence, hold your thoughts. And as you hear him say, he just quoted the National Academy of Science showing how serious this is. And he's looking at the whole contemporary solar physics and climate change. And this is very, very important that we understand. So very succinctly, he's just told us that we just missed one that would have thrown us back to the 18th century. And we're not prepared to live in that. We're used to all of our electronics. But I want to go further. And he also told us the solution, that the power industry, the utility industry, could, for a little under $2 billion, about $1.5 billion, create special new types of grid protectors. Just imagine that all of your computers have a surge protector. And your home should have a surge protector. I have a huge surge protector in my home. And so if there's electrical storm, which there are where I live, the surge protector protects it. He's talking about the same kind of surge protector, but massive. And we would have these, about 500 of them around the United States. So when the solar storm comes, which it is coming, and hits, goes into the ground, it won't burn up and fry these, because you heard him say there's a 3-year waiting list and they can only produce about 100 a year, and there's no way to get them to us even if they could produce one, and there's no spare parts sitting around. So that's important for us to know. Let's go over and say hello to Matt Stein, MIT graduate in engineering, and Matt has spent an enormous amount of time, thousands of hours, studying solar storms and what we can do about them. But Matt, tell us, how bad will it be? Give us a likely scenario. Give us your perspective on this, please.
A solar storm happens every now and then. The sun sort of burps. It's called a coronal mass ejection, or often referred to as a CME, abbreviated coronal mass ejection. And that's kind of when the sun sort of burps. There's like a big burst of sun stuff that goes flying out into space. And it flies out really fast, like 1,000 times faster than our rockets fly. And so most of the time this stuff flies out into space far away from planet Earth. But every now and then, like we've had roughly, in the last 150 years, we've had roughly 100 major geomagnetic storms. So every now and then when the sun stuff goes flying out, it hits the planet Earth. And when it does, the charged particles of plasma from the sun interact with our atmosphere and cause an electromagnetic pulse. It's kind of a slow burn of a pulse. It's sort of like getting a generator spinning on your car and generating power out of it. And it causes this large electromagnetic pulse that kind of goes for anywhere from a few hours to several days. The 1859 Carrington event was 2 1-2 punches of a CME, where there was a Richard Carrington observed it with his telescope, and he saw this major coronal mass ejection coming off of the sun. And then 2 days later, he noted that there was a second one that came off the sun, and both of these were aimed towards planet Earth. So they had amazing northern lights and southern lights all over the planet, so the aurora borealis. And so what happened was the sky lit up with blood red, orange, gold streaks, you know, shimmering curtains of green and gold light, all the way from the North Pole down to Puerto Rico and Cuba. They even said they could see the northern lights in Cuba. You know, imagine that. Like, very few of us in the United States, except for those who lived in the northern states, have ever even seen the northern lights other than in pictures. Now imagine people in Hawaii and Cuba seeing the sky lit up at night with the shimmering curtains of light. Now, it went all the way from the South Pole as far north as American Samoa. So during this 1921 event, the entire planet at night was lit up except for a very narrow sliver around the deep tropical zone. And you can imagine, like, when you take a horseshoe magnet and you dip it in sand as a kid and you see iron filings stick to the north and south poles of the magnet. Well, the iron filings don't stick to the center of the magnet, so the north and south poles kind of cancel each other out around the center of the Earth. And that's why you get much less of the interaction, electromagnetic interaction, around the deep tropical zones than you get towards the poles. Okay, so in 1859, they had this 1-2 punch where the Earth got lit up for 2 days, and then the second CME hit, and it got the Earth, electromagnetically speaking, spinning again, and it lit up for a whole another 5 days, so for a total of a week. 1921 was lit up for 2 days. Well, let's look at some similar ones that are in more recent history. See, in 1921, there was no giant interconnected grid like there is today. There was just individual electrified cities, and there were no giant transformers to, you know, make hundreds of thousands of volts, high tension lines to transmit power, you know, thousands of miles across the United States. That didn't exist then. So what it did do was it burned down a station outside of, in a town outside of New York City, burned to the ground with induced currents, and it burned down telegraph wires. And same thing with 1859, a whole bunch of telegraphs burned down in the United States and some in other parts of the world, and they were able to send signals with telegraphs. But so it was a very interesting event back then in 1921 and 1859, but it wasn't really hugely traumatic because there was no giant grid and there were no massive transformers. And it turns out that these transformers, they're great for making a grid run efficiently, but they're an Achilles heel that is highly susceptible to damage from these massive electromagnetic events from the great geomagnetic storms. Okay, so let's look at more recent history and see what happened. In 1989, there was a major geomagnetic storm, very strong, but it was one-tenth as strong as the 1921 storm. So what did that do? The 1989 storm, it blew out one of these massive transformers in the province of Quebec. And not only did it blow that out, it caused, in the first 30 seconds of the 1989 storm, the Quebec grid experienced 15 simultaneous failures, one of which was one of these massive transformers blowing. And the unsurprising result was a province-wide blackout. So like 6 million people were out of power for anywhere from several hours to a couple of days. Now, in 2003... there was a less strong, which means even less than 10% of the 1921 storm, but it was longer in duration than the 1989 storm. And for reasons I don't fully understand, even though I have a Bachelor of Science from MIT, I'm not a high energy physicist. And this storm in 2003 blew, eventually caused 14 of these massive transformers to fail in South Africa. And that's what I mentioned before, where for an entire year, the whole country, the only way they could operate and keep the grid going was by rationing power throughout the whole country until they got those replacements to those 14 transformers. So now we're looking at, so here's two storms in modern history. The 1989 storm blew one out in the UK, blew one out in New Jersey near a nuclear power plant, and blew one out in Quebec. And the UK and the eastern coast of the United States managed to keep the grid going with some short-term power failures, but nothing huge. The province of Quebec, it blew the whole province of Quebec out, and realize it's a little stronger north. But that's his one-tenth as strong as the 1921 storm, which they predict is the 1 in 8 decades chance, and been 9 decades. So we're overdue for a 1921-style storm. And as the sun is showing in the last year, we've had two events where one was a very near miss of planet Earth. If it had happened 2 weeks earlier, it would have been the scenario we just described. And the other one went totally off in the other direction, but was actually many times stronger than you know, so it was basically like 100 times as strong as this 1989 event that blew three of these transformers out.
Matt, hold your thoughts there. So let's just recapitulate, because I realize some of this is new information for people. Matt Stein has just given us a historical look at real solar storms. It knocked the power out in South Africa for a year. Elevators wouldn't run. The escalators wouldn't run. Things working on electricity wouldn't run. They had to scramble. Now, mind you, these were only one-tenth as bad as the one in the early 1920s. That's what we're expecting to have now. The next one we have, in all probability, will be a major one. Now, the last two that have not hit Earth, but have been very recent, one just 2 weeks ago and one just yesterday, these would have been big. These would have been bigger than 21 in the Carrington effect. This would have knocked out virtually all electricity in the Northern Hemisphere, meaning nothing. You wouldn't have telephones, televisions, wouldn't be able to have refrigeration. You wouldn't be able to get money out of a bank. You wouldn't be able to heat or cool your house. You wouldn't be able to get gasoline, everything, water out of your sink, flush a toilet once, that's it. That's a real life changer, especially when you're dealing with no one being prepared. So I just wanted to give two historical perspectives. Now let's go over and say hello to Dr. Robert Schock, a professor of geology at the College of General Studies, Boston University, where he's taught since 1984. He received his doctorate in geophysics from Yale University. And Professor Schock is a leading researcher and scholar on the new archaeology movement. And he is the author of most recent book is Forgotten Civilization, The Role of Solar Outburst in Our Past and Future. And his website is Robert, and Schock is spelled schoch.com. Nice to have you with us. Give us your perspective on this, please.
I am absolutely convinced at this point, based on the data, that the sun does have this 12,000-year, approximately 12,000-year cycle that you just mentioned. And if you think about when was the end of the last ice age, 12,000 years ago. So things seem to be fitting. One thing I've been thinking about and working on, too, is if you go back further in time, because I'm a geologist, so going back further in time, we have a series of ice ages. We have earlier, I don't even want to call it civilizations before the end of the last ice age, but we have humanity. Everyone probably has heard of Neanderthals and the other populations that were existing in the world back in the ice ages. And the data is now tentative at the moment, but I believe we can trace this cycle, about 12,000 or so year cycle, going back further in time and tying in with earlier cycles of ice ages, earlier cycles of humanity, or some people want to call it proto-humanity because some of the species are not necessarily the same as us biologically. So I think that's very important. And when you have cycles like that, I'm a geologist. These things don't just stop. They continue into the present day. They continue into the future. So given that we have this cycle, or let's assume that we have this 12,000-year cycle, we are right on time, if you would, for going into a volatile, erratic period for the sun. You just mentioned it in the last 50, 70 years. We have seen spikes in solar activity, and now this is very good data because it's observational data tied in with the isotope data. We have seen spikes in solar activity, which is exactly what we saw at the beginning of the end of the last ice age, if I could put it that way, right at the end of the last ice age. So we are seeing all the same signs, I am convinced, that we had at the end of the last ice age of spikes of activity, of volatility, erratic behavior. If you follow the sun on a day-by-day basis, as I do, right now people say, oh, maybe we're going into a dormant period. Maybe we're going into a period where the sun is going to go quiet. Well, that's what you had at the end of the last ice age, too, if you were following it day by day. And then it explodes again.
Well, I would challenge those people because just a couple of weeks ago, we had one of the most extreme sunburst in history. It was just on the other side of the sun.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So we have to be very, very diligent, very careful about this, because that's the other factor. We can have these extreme ones. And there was a big one, of course, in 2012, but we missed it barely. The Earth.
2 weeks.
Barely, yes, exactly, by 2 weeks. So we have this incredible activity, even if people can still be complacent. When I say people, the average person that I feel just doesn't want to know the information.
It scares them. Let's go into two areas here. So on the one hand, we know, and it's not hypothesis, it is fact, that the sun in 2012 and recently has had extreme activity.
Exactly.
And the most extreme, in fact, they said it dwarfed the Carrington effect just a couple of weeks ago, but we were fortunate that it was in going against the other side of the sun and not towards Earth. We also know that the Earth's electromagnetic shield has been weakening over the decades.
That's right. It's gone down by at least, I believe, 15% over the last 150 years or so,
now, then,
which is an incredible amount, and it's gone down by, you know, maybe a third or more in the last couple of millennia. And again, that may sound like a long time for the average person, but I'm a geologist. 2,000 years is nothing.
Well, then let's put this in perspective. If I believe that there's something critical in our need to understand as lay people, what happens if a larger solar storm hits the Earth, and what relevance that has on the fears of a flipping of the Earth's poles, and also, based upon the scientific evidence, do you have any idea what the risks of an extreme solar proton emission event would have to plant, animal, and human life?
Okay, so a couple of questions there. As far as the Earth's magnetic field, it is weakening as far as we can measure it at the moment. It continues to weaken at a possibly increasing rate. It's a really dramatic weakening, and this has a lot of implications. First off, we use the magnetic field for many practical applications, but more importantly, the magnetic field helps shield us from solar storms, from solar events, that type of thing. So with a weakened magnetic field, we become all the more vulnerable. So that's a major concern. We are also becoming more vulnerable, in my assessment, and I think in anyone that studied this, they would agree with this, every day, literally every day, because of our increasing reliance on microelectronics, satellite systems, electrical grid systems, that type of thing. There is now evidence of something you just mentioned, a major solar proton event. There's evidence that this occurred based in particular on, again, isotope data from certain sediment cores, that there was a major solar proton event at the end of the last ice age. That is, these incredibly high-speed protons being thrown off by the sun, colliding, to put it very simply, colliding with the Earth, penetrating down to the surface of the Earth. Now, back then, at the end of the last ice age, as far as we know, no one had sophisticated electronics and cell phones and, you know, laptop computers, that type of thing. A major solar proton event in our society, in our day, could, I believe, based on, again, the evidence that we've tried to accumulate and test, it could cause serious damage even to people's private personal electronic devices, put them out of service, that type of thing, much less what is going to happen to the grid system, to satellite communications. So, you know, when we're looking at a society that is entirely dependent, and I hate to put it that way, and I don't want to be a fearmonger, I think that, you know, what we really need to do is move to action collectively to try to strengthen and fortify the system, you know, work together. But right now we're incredibly vulnerable. as a society, most people would not know what to do without their electronic gadgets, without their electrical grid system supplying effectively all their necessities for them.
I agree with that. Professor Robert Schock, and for today, I'm not going to do any more on this, so I want to thank award-winning investigative journalist Lawrence Joseph, who writes in the New York Times and other publications, and scholar on this, Professor Robert Schock, and, of course, from all the good work that he has done, Matt Stein. Other issues, including coming up, the National Institutes of Health, quote, vaccinate the whole country. Really? With experimental Ebola vaccine? You're kidding. Who said that? Was that Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the U.S. National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease and the leading advocate for more drugs for AIDS? Or even, yeah, I'll give you my take on that. Also, 64 countries in the world require GMO labeling. USA, no. And 10 states where foreclosures are soaring. And that's not a good idea. What's going on in those 10 states? I'll tell you which ones they are. One quick break, and here's what we got. I'm holding it up. We've been out of it. It sold out, of course, in the first day. I promoted it. And as I introduced it, as you can see, if you're watching, you can go to Ustream channel, search for Gary Nall, and you can see the television program here. You'll see I'm holding a jar. I'm going to ask my engineer to bring me in a green stuff, or someone bring me in a green stuff. I want to compare these. This is a huge good jar. It's survival stuff. You know, it's, and I wanted to have something in case there ever is any emergency. A solar storm, of course, is my biggest concern because it's inevitable. It is going to happen. And look at how we were totally unprepared for any of the other storms that we've had. Katrina, Sandy, the earthquakes, the forest fires, the mudslides, the storm surges, the Ebola virus. We're unprepared for everything. So at least those in this audience who do want to be prepared now can be. By the way, here's our green stuff. Here's survival stuff. See the difference? Huge difference. Now, what I did was, let's just say, and I'm going to have a meeting on this next weekend, but I'm not going to announce any more on it now, for surviving. But if you care enough about what happens in the future, and if you feel you want to be on the right side of being concerned about you and your family or loved one's future, if there is a blackout, if there is a crisis, you're going to have water and you're going to have food. Well, many of you already have my portable water filter. That's the best that I know of in the world. If you can find me a better portable water filter, buy it. But I don't know of any, and then let them show you the tests that they've done with it, and I'll show you what we've done. But today I'm not talking about the water filter, because thousands already have it. I'm talking about survival stuff, because I know if I've got to eat, and I know that I can't go to a store because the food's not going to be there. Within 24 to 48 hours, you're not going to find a piece of food in any store. You're not going to find candles, flashlights. You're not going to find water. And so therefore, you're going to think, why in the heck didn't I listen to Gary? I never thought it would happen because it never had. Now it has. So what do I do? Well, if you're smart, you'll have this standing by, two or three jars of this huge bottle of survival stuff. Now, I took a year and a half to blend, perfect, test before I brought this to market. First, I want to know if I have to survive and I have no other sources of food, what do I need? Well, I need protein. So I put spit plea protein, brown rice protein, in here. But I also need vegetables and fruit. So I put alfalfa and pumpkin seeds and flax seeds and barley grass and carrots and kale. Cauliflower and cabbage, parsley and ginger, spinach and celery, broccoli and asparagus, collard greens and apples and bananas and cranberries, strawberries and chlorella, the algae, spirulina, the algae, blueberries and blackberries, raspberries and kamut, oats and oat beta-glucan, and sprouted quinoa and sprouted kamut, and sprouted spelt and sprouted amaranth, which are non-gluten, oat beta-glucan and chia seeds, four types of seaweed, including alaria and dulse and laminaria and digestive enzymes like protease, amylase, lipase, cellulase, papain, and bromelain. Probiotics, man, you want those, and you're not going to find those anywhere if there's a blackout, if there's a crisis. And boy, do you need probiotics to keep healthy bacteria in your body. I put 8 billion, 8 billion from 5 different types in here. I sweeten it with a little stevia. It has a natural pineapple flavor, a natural cherry flavor, and that's it. There's nothing else in here. It gives you the fiber, 15 grams. It gives you the protein, 17 grams. It gives you no trans fats, no saturated fats, only 2 grams of fat altogether, and that's coming from the flaxseed, pumpkin seed. So this is it. This is the non-GMO vegan survival package. Just put it in your house and forget you have it, and unless you want to use it as a your form of meal replacer, because it's got everything in here. Now, normally this would cost you $220, because remember, this is green stuff. This is survival stuff. Look at the difference. It's huge. It's, what is it, 4 pounds, 1,800 grams? So that way you know whatever happens, you can survive. At least you got something in the way of very good, the highest quality nourishment, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, legumes, fatty acids, probiotics, fiber, protein. It's all there. I don't know how else to say it. Let's get on the same page. Let's help someone survive. So that you're taken care of. Then what? Then you got to know everything else. And you got to know it before this happens. So I've just, here's the artwork for it. It's done. I have it's a really good CD. Brand new. Hasn't even been mentioned or offered yet. It's called 3 Hours. It's called Surviving a Solar Storm. 3 audio CD series. And in here, in recent years, I talk about the sun's activity has turned more erratic, volatile, unpredictable, as an increasing amount of the X-class solar storms, those are the big ones, are being reported by government space agencies. Fortunately, those directed towards the Earth were not severe, and the more serious corona mass ejections, or CMAEs, were directed away from our planet. Well, once radiation of solar flares reach the Earth, geomagnetic storms can ensue. And the event of an exceptionally large solar storm, which they're predicting, plasma outbursts, the electrical grids are going to fry. All electronic communication will simply stop. And then comes no traffic lights, no police. Just imagine who's going to come if you're sick. Who's going to come if you got a heart attack? What if you're in a hospital? What if you're in a hospice care? The lights go out, the emergency power backup goes out, medicines are gone. You know, what if you need your meds? What if your kid needs meds? You're not going to know what to do. So this is a blueprint for surviving it. This is a blueprint of what to do, step by step. I don't know of any more intelligent purchase you could make right now based upon what's going on in the world. And boy, if this Ebola didn't give you a wake-up as how unprepared and how ignorant we are, then, and that, by the way, is not a solar storm. Solar storm, you wouldn't even be knowing what's going on, because every television, every computer, every cell phone would be out except for the battery you have in it. When that's gone, it's over. So get this so you can survive it. Now, you can get it one of three ways. One is you can buy the Surviving a Solar Storm 3 CD set by itself, $30. You can buy this huge 4-pound survival stuff, which every home should have 2 or 3 of these. You should buy these, this $149, or the two together for $150. For $1, I'm giving you the $30 value. All right? That's how you're going to get it. $149.95 for survival stuff, which is a big savings, and $30 for survival, the Solar Storm, the 3 CD, or the both together, the whole package, for $150. How do you get it? Until supplies last, and the last time they lasted 24 hours, and we just got the new shipment in today. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and if that should be busy, call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey. You're on
the
air.
Hi, Gary. Well, the part that really scares me, excuse me, about a solar storm or a coronal mass ejection is that many of America's nuclear plants are grid-powered. Like the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant here, it uses power from the grid to pump the 2.5 billion gallons a day, run the plant, and keep the spent fuel rod pools cool. If that plant goes down, if the grid goes down, the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, only mandates that they have 7 days' worth of fuel on hand to run the pumps to power it. After that, you'll get a nuclear meltdown, and if the grid goes down, I don't know if any of the pumps that pump fuel can be brought for the plant could be brought in. So it's we're talking about nuclear meltdowns at many of America's nuclear power plants. Plus, the coronal mass ejection could fry the electronics inside the plant. So that's the part that really scares me, Gary.
You're right to be fearful. As you know, Harvey, I don't know if you watched it, Knocking on the Devil's Door, Deadly Nuclear Legacy, my documentary on nuclear power. Did you see it? Did you see the film? No? Anyhow, in there I talk about that virtually all of our current, there were 104, now there are 100 nuclear facilities around the United States. The others are no longer operating, but they haven't dealt with the spent fuel rods at those. And that means if the electricity goes off, the 2 billion gallons of water that are pulled out of either rivers, like the Hudson River, it pulls it out at Indian Point. There's two reactors there, or the Diablo Canyon. You've got those. They're pulling out about 2 billion gallons of water also out of the ocean. Those stop. When that stops, then you have a super meltdown of the water. It evaporates in the spent fuel rods. And you have more spent fuel rods and more energy contained in those spent fuel rods outside of the nuclear plant, nearby on the grounds, than you do inside the core reactor. Now, the core reactor has safeguards that will automatically shut it down. Shutting it down, but there's always this idea that when you shut it down, you still are able to cool it. But that is not the case because, as Harvey correctly said, anywhere from 7 to 30 days, it depends upon what their mandate is per plant, they have backup fuel. How do we know that that generator is working? How often do they test these generators? Greg Pallas once told me when I was filming him for that they used a technology that had never been used before, and therefore no one has really tested these things to see if they work. So that is a big problem. So from a week to 4 weeks, you could go without electricity before then the plant went Fukushima. And that is a big concern. The meltdown and explosion of nuclear facilities around the United States where the power grid had gone off. Now, there are some places in America where the power grid will probably not go off and because they're on different grids. Like in Texas, they're using a Mexican grid. So that power probably would stay on. In certain places in the Southwest, it would probably stay on. But the whole eastern quarter across the United States, and then from Oregon, Washington, California, that, if a solar storm hit at a high level, you'd be out of electricity. The trouble is you wouldn't be able to get electricity back on even if other grids came to your aid and bypassed and reconnected. You're looking at weeks to months before it happens. Now, that's a big problem, one that we should pay attention to, and we haven't. Congress met on this. The House passed a unanimous bill to get these grids protected. The Senate killed it because of lobbying from the utility industries that didn't want to spend $1 billion on upgrading the quality of our completely decrepit grid system. I'll be doing more on another program on this very issue. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Utrecht Lead, coming on right now. Please stay with us.